Devereaux, backed by more than 100 years of service to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and half a century of working directly with children and adults with autism, now provides autism diagnoses for children. Devereaux offers timely appointments in as little as 4 weeks and uses the ADOS-2, the latest of autism assessments. For more information or to request an appointment, devereaux.org. Devereaux is proud to support WHYY.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The EPA's new Clean Power Plan requires each state to meet a personalized carbon emission goal for its power plants. Many states, especially those with coal and oil industries, have objected, and now New Jersey is also voicing concerns, as WHYY's Jessica McDonald reports.
New Jersey already gets more than half of its electricity from nuclear power and just 3% from coal. Department of Environmental Protection Commissioner Bob Martin says that's part of the problem.
We've made that investment already from New Jersey, and we believe this is very unfair. And the regulation itself is, you know, very cumbersome, very confusing, and it will cost the state of New Jersey and the ratepayers a significant amount of money.
Other states that are bigger polluters, he says, will be held to a less stringent emissions standard. In a letter to the EPA, Martin called the regulations an unprecedented regulatory overreach and asked the agency to reconsider. He says New Jersey has not yet decided whether it will take the matter to court if the EPA says no. But University of Pennsylvania law professor Carrie Colonisi says the move is just a prelude to litigation.
New Jersey's obviously signaling that they are going to go to court against the EPA.
Doug O'Malley of Environment New Jersey is criticizing the Christie administration for the decision, saying it was politically motivated and the wrong path for the state.
Governor Christie can ask for a get-out-of-jail-free card from the EPA, but he's not going to stop the science of climate change. And unfortunately, New Jersey is on the front lines of climate change, and we need to be a leader, not a laggard.
The EPA says it will vigorously defend the regulations in court. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
The World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia will offer some tickets for the papal events to the general public. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports that that word comes 24 hours after the announcement that tickets will be required for prime viewing positions.
Although the need for tickets wasn't known until the Secret Service released a map of the Benjamin Franklin Parkway for the papal events, Donna Farrell, the World Meeting of Families, says tickets were always in the plans.
For security reasons, for crowd management, it became important that we have ticketed areas.
Farrell says it's not being close to the stage or altar for the papal events that matters. It's being part of the experience that's most important.
A huge part of this is the experience, is the pilgrims joining arms and singing and waving their flag from Toledo, Ohio or Toledo, Spain.
But after hearing complaints that prime viewing areas weren't available to the general public, Farrell says organizers will make 30,000 total tickets available online.
10,000 tickets to the Festival of Families on Saturday, September 26th, will be made available to the public on a first-come, first-served basis beginning Wednesday, September 9th. And another 10,000 tickets to the Papal Mass on Sunday, September 27th, will be made available to the public on a first-come, first-served basis beginning Wednesday, September 9th as well.
How will this happen, you may ask? Online was the only information offered up by officials who say they're working out details for the ticket giveaway, which also includes another 5,000 tickets for the Saturday Independence Hall speech. And last but not least, Pope Francis will loop around the festival grounds on the parkway Saturday and Sunday. But organizers won't say if he'll be riding in the Pope-mobile, although there have been reports the vehicle is already in the U.S. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Now, you may think you're a walking catechism, but how well do you really know the Pope? Find out and maybe even learn something in our trivia quiz at whyy.org/popeinphilly, part of WHYY's special coverage of Pope Francis's historic visit. Last Friday, Houston-area Sheriff's Deputy Darren Goforth was killed when Shannon Miles shot him from behind at a gas station. A Harris County sheriff blamed the Black Lives Matter movement for the tragic death. But NewsWorks blogger Solomon Jones says that sentiment is misguided.
If it's proven that Shannon Miles pumped 15 bullets into the body of Darren Goforth, a Houston-area sheriff's deputy, Miles should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But in the absence of an investigation and trial, Miles's guilt remains in question, and so does the reason for Goforth's tragic death. That didn't stop Harris County, Texas Sheriff Ron Hickman from blaming the shooting on Black Lives Matter, a movement that seeks to stop police from killing unarmed African Americans. This rhetoric has gotten out of control, Hickman said at a press conference shortly after Goforth's death. We've heard Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. Well, cops' lives matter too. So why don't we just drop the qualifier and just say lives matter and take that to the bank? Hickman was right to say everyone's life matters, but in my view, just about everything else about his statement was wrong. As a law enforcement professional, Hickman should know that it's irresponsible to assign blame before an investigation has been completed. But there is an even more troubling undertone to Hickman's assertions, because Deputy Goforth was white and his alleged shooter is black. As much as we'd like to believe that doesn't matter, the truth is, it does. It matters because the so-called rhetoric of the Black Lives Matter movement centers on the fact that blacks are far more likely to be killed by police than whites. It matters because the police-related deaths of unarmed black civilians like Eric Garner, John Crawford, and Tamir Rice were caught on video, yet no police officer was convicted. It matters because no one should have to launch a movement to remind law enforcement that every life is important, no matter the color of one's skin. The Black Lives Matter movement is not responsible for the tragic shooting death of Deputy Goforth, but Hickman and others seem to believe that when black people dare to speak up about unfair police treatment, we are responsible for whatever negative actions occur afterward. In any other case, this would be called blaming the victim. But when it comes to African Americans, there seems to be a different set of rules. It's wrong that the very police officers whose salaries we pay can kill us with impunity. It's wrong that officers who kill unarmed civilians too often face secret grand jury proceedings instead of open trials. Police who kill unarmed civilians should face public scrutiny, just like Shannon Miles, the man who allegedly pumped 15 bullets into Deputy Darren Goforth. That's what Black Lives Matter activists want, and that's what Americans should expect in every case, whether the perpetrator is black or white, rich or poor, officer or civilian. Justice, after all, should be blind. I'm Solomon Jones.
Solomon Jones writes the Philadelphia Experiment blog on Newsworks.org. Taking a look at this evening's headlines, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker today announced his support for the Iran nuclear deal. He's siding with fellow Democrat President Barack Obama despite home state pressures to say no. Booker contends that the deal is flawed, but the alternative is worse. John Dougherty, leader of Philadelphia's politically powerful electricians union, will take over leadership of the 40,000-member Philadelphia Building and Construction Trades Council December 1st. Dougherty, often referred to as Johnny Doc, has led Local 98 of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers since 1993. He's also a Democratic ward leader in South Philadelphia. A federal appeals court finds Pennsylvania Congressman Chaka Fattah cannot keep investigators out of his personal email. The Philadelphia Inquirer reports that yesterday's ruling clears the way for prosecutors to sift through 7 years of the Philadelphia Democrats' private email as they prepare for his racketeering trial. Fattah is accused of misusing federal grants and charitable donations. He denies any wrongdoing. He was charged in July with racketeering conspiracy, fraud, money laundering, and other crimes. Mostly clear skies, 92 degrees at 6:15. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. This evening's forecast, turning partly cloudy, low overnight, 72 degrees. Tomorrow, partly sunny, high 88. There is a 30% chance of late day showers, perhaps even a thunderstorm. To the weekend, sunny on Saturday, high a comfortable 83. Sunny on Sunday, high in the upper 80s, and ahead to Labor Day, mostly sunny, Monday's high, again, near 90. It's 6:15. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY.
Still ahead,
Bassett's has been selling their green tea flavored ice cream to China for years, but Congress is putting those sales in the cooler.
I cannot help but suspect that without replacing this foreign receivables insurance, our shipments to China are going to diminish significantly.
We'll look at the debate over the little-known Export-Import Bank as NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's CARON.org.
You turn to WHYY for exceptional coverage of the day's events and exciting storytelling. As Philadelphia prepares to welcome Pope Francis, we're investigating everything from the cultural and historical impact to need-to-know logistics, what it means for the world, the region, the city, and you. In the weeks ahead, stay with WHYY for ongoing reporting on the Pope's visit and find all of our special coverage and online features in one place at whyy.org/pope in Philly.
Most remember Steve Jobs for his groundbreaking work, but there are some shadier activities hidden on that resume.
There was a level of malfeasance that was tolerated because he was who he was.
I'm Molly Wood, the good and bad of one of the most iconic CEOs. Next time on Marketplace from APM.
Coming up next on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. There's a little-known bank run by the federal government that expired this summer. It supports billions of dollars in economic activity across our region. WHYY Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo has this report on how many local businesses are hoping Congress can revive the Export-Import Bank when they return to Washington next week.
What better way to embrace summer than with ice cream? That's why we ventured down to Bassett's Ice Cream Stand in Reading Terminal Market.
You want the Oreo cone with chocolate upside down the cup?
Yes, please.
Two scoops already, right? Okay, that's all I need.
Bassett's is America's oldest ice cream company. Michael Strange's great-great-grandfather founded it, and he's now grooming the sixth generation to take over the family business.
We are the last remaining original merchant in this Reading Terminal Market, which opened in 1892. We still have our original marble counters here. So this is truly an historic venue in Philadelphia, and I would say the epicenter of food in the city.
Even though the ice cream is now sold internationally, Strange says the company hasn't forgotten its roots. Just take a look at their most popular variety, vanilla.
That's our vanilla bean spec. That is quintessentially Philadelphia. Many companies use vanilla extract. And I think people who are eating Philadelphia vanilla expect those little black bean specks.
But the company has evolved. It now makes a green tea or matcha ice cream for their customers in China. Bassett shipped its first batch to China in 2008. Strange says his overseas business is dependent on the credit guarantees he receives from the Export-Import Bank, a federal bank that financially backs U.S. companies that export overseas. Strange says even though the bank's charter has lapsed, his credit line will last a couple more months. But he's worried Republicans in Congress are going to kill the bank once and for all.
It's not going to put us out of business, but it's certainly going to affect our volume. It's going to affect our hiring plans in coming years. It'll affect our growth. I mean, the effects are going to be manyfold on this.
Philadelphia Democratic Congressman Chaka Fatah says the bank doesn't just support local ice cream.
So peanut chews, which are manufactured in Philly, now being sold in 46 other countries around the world. Pin, fish, and tackle over in Newark, Philadelphia, selling fishing reels at $1,500 a reel all around the world. Opening up opportunities for our businesses to build it here and to sell it other places makes sense.
The Export-Import Bank has been at the center of a fierce debate, dividing more moderate Republicans and Tea Party conservatives who call it corporate welfare. They also point out the bank removed officials last year over allegations they took bribes in order to finance contracts with federal money. Central Pennsylvania Republican Congressman Tom Marino is still undecided on the bank but he's demanding reforms.
I want more oversight on it. I want more guarantees of payments. I want when someone is unable to make the payment, we need to do a complete investigation as to why, and if there are assets out there. It's just like someone filing bankruptcy and hiding assets. I don't want that to happen.
The bank claims it supports close to 600 businesses across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. They export more than $12 billion in goods. That's why many businesses were up in arms that Republican leaders allowed the bank's charter to expire at the beginning of July. Central Jersey Republican Tom MacArthur is hoping his party leaders can at least placate the conservative wing of the party and revive the bank.
Well, there's a lot of people here that would like to shut it down, so I think we've got to address some of the issues that have been problem. And there are some things that need to change in the bank. But I, for one, strongly believe that we need to reauthorize it.
But North Jersey Democrat Bill Pascrell says this fight over the Export-Import Bank reveals that the Republican Party has been co-opted by the Tea Party.
These guys just want to undermine government. This is a plan that calls for no tax money. In fact, it's brought $650 million into the Treasury just this past year. There is no reason to undo the effort to create jobs in America.
Back at Bassett's Ice Cream, Michael Strange isn't thinking about politics. He's been trying to find a private bank to replace the Export-Import Bank, and he hasn't found one willing to support his international business.
I cannot help but suspect that without replacing this foreign receivables insurance, our shipments to China are going to diminish significantly.
While Congress prepares to debate the bank this fall, Strange says he's going to keep calling around to find a replacement, but he isn't optimistic. For WHYY News, I'm Matt Laszlo.
Philadelphia's legacy in the world of jazz is quite secure. Think performers, whether Transplants, Heath Brothers, Dizzy Gillespie, John Coltrane, Sun Ra, homegrown Clifford Brown, Philly Joe Jones, Grover Washington Jr., or performance places, the legacy ones, Showboat and Peps from the past, or access via radio, the RTI Jazz broadcast with Bob Perkins. Philadelphia jazz is still going strong. The main outpost for contemporary jazz and modern music is the Ars Nova Workshop, embarking on its 15th season tomorrow. Joining me in conversation is Mark Christman, founder and executive director of Ars Nova Workshop. Mark, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
At what point did you drop into the Philadelphia jazz scene?
Well, I dropped into the Philadelphia jazz scene probably before I moved here for school in the mid-90s. But it was soon after I graduated with an undergraduate degree from Drexel that I actually founded this organization and just kind of went headfirst into presenting.
Now, perhaps still in the early 90s, just down the street from here was Third Street Jazz. I was a frequenter there. What opportunities do aficionados have for jazz these days in the Philadelphia region?
Well, Ars Nova is presenting 40, 50 concerts a year in almost just as many spaces. You know, we're really trying to connect artists to the great space potential that lies in this city. It's not a one-size-fits-all scenario. We're talking about jazz and improvised music. It belongs in different places and locations, and it appeals to different audiences and different neighborhoods and different environments. And we're trying to really, you know, be a bit of a matchmaker.
And now, as you've just introduced improvised music into the lexicon, in addition to jazz, how would you define that genre?
You know, our foundational focus is around jazz and free jazz, the great continuums that started with John Coltrane and Miles Davis and Ornette Coleman and Charles Mingus and so on. But there is improvised music that is perhaps not rooted in blues or American traditions. Perhaps it's improvised music that is informed by other aspects of music making and folk traditions. You know, we want to make connections to these worlds. For instance, the performer who we're presenting tomorrow night embodies this intersection of these worlds. He's a son and essentially a student of Anthony Braxton, a MacArthur Fellow, very important American jazz musician, one of the most important living. His name is Tyondi Braxton, even though he has spent years as a founding member of an avant rock group that does do improvising. He has emerged as a real player in the, I'd say, 21st century composition, new classical music world. Of course, electronics and modular synths and all different aspects of music making are integrated into his approach. But he's not a jazz musician per se. But without jazz music, there would be no Tyonti Braxton, of course.
So what are some of the challenges and rewards of exposing this music to new and specifically younger audiences?
The challenges is always to present the avant-garde and present experimental work of any sort to audiences that are continuing to get older, while there are new and younger folks moving to Philadelphia and participating in a nightlife, let's say. The story of Philadelphia as an important jazz town is it is disappearing. This is the city of Dizzy Gillespie and John Coltrane and Sun Ra. And there really aren't many dedicated spaces for this work to be presented. So Ars Nova, instead of creating one space in which we're presenting this work, we're really going into dozens of communities, even using spaces that have no music or art presenting histories.
For example?
For example, Bartram's Garden. On September 20th, we'll be presenting another MacArthur Fellow, Steve Coleman, there. Many of his improvising compositional practices have a lot to do with the lunar cycles. So we're presenting him very close to the full moon. We're presenting him around the autumn equinox. And we're trying to connect John Bartram's ideas of the heavens and the earth to Steve's compositional improvisational practices around the same things, providing him with that opportunity to engage with a space which is deep in West Philadelphia, and really engage with the history of this space, which is a very specific Philadelphia story, and then allow it to inform his work and the creation of his work, you know, is something we're really excited about doing.
Mark Chrisman, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Mark Chrisman is founder and executive director of Ars Nova Workshop. And with that, let's go out this evening with this selection from Steve Coleman. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Alex Lewis. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
The University of the Arts in Philadelphia Continuing Studies Division supports WHYY. With more than 70 classes for adults, including DIY workshops and an Artful Living series, Continuing Studies also offers 8 certificate programs for working creative professionals. Certificates include social media marketing, web design, photography, music business, and more. Their fall information session is Wednesday, September 9th at 5:30 p.m. Details at cs.uarts.edu.